Hey, today I'm talking with Ellen Bernstein. She's the president of the Albuquerque Teachers Federation in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And she's sharing with us the Our Turn Report. I think you're going to find this interesting. Thanks for checking us out. Stay tuned.
You are listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, a podcast for educators, helping you help kids achieve their dreams. And now here's Steve with this week's show.
Today I'm talking about the national report called Our Turn, Revitalizing Public Education and Strengthening Our Democracy Through the Collective Wisdom of Teachers with Ellen Bernstein. TURN stands for the Teacher Union Reform Network. It is a coalition of teachers and teacher union leaders from AFT, the American Federation of Teachers, and NEA, National Education Association, union locals, and was founded 20 years ago. TURN's stated purpose is to promote progressive reforms in education and in teacher unions. Dr. Ellen Bernstein began her career in public education as a sign language interpreter and then taught in Albuquerque elementary schools for 17 years. Over the course of her teaching career, Ellen developed an expertise in multi-age level teaching and inclusion. Ellen is a nationally board certified teacher in early childhood. Throughout her teaching career, Ellen has been a union activist. She has worked her way through the ranks of the ATF and is now the president of the Albuquerque Teachers Federation. Ellen was born and raised in Albuquerque, New Mexico. She earned her bachelor's in elementary education, a master's in special education, and a doctorate in educational leadership, all from the University of New Mexico. Ellen comes from a family of educators. Her grandfather, father, and sister were or are now teachers. Say hi to everyone, Ellen.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
I appreciate you joining me, and I so wish I was out in New Mexico. Now Georgia's nice, but I spent a couple of years out in New Mexico, and it's pretty cool. Especially if I remember right, this time of the year it gets very nice.
Oh, it's beautiful, and we just finished the Balloon Fiesta, which is our claim to fame here in Albuquerque. You know, 800 hot air balloons going up, coloring the sky. It's just a beautiful time of year.
I can only imagine what that looks like with all the balloons, and that would be amazing. And I've seen pictures of it. I've never been at it. Very nice. Well, you know, what I'd like to do is just kind of start off from just talking a little bit about that. I know that you're probably just a little biased here. You're born in Albuquerque. But what's your favorite thing about living in Albuquerque and New Mexico?
Well, 360 days of sunshine. You can't beat it. I like to ride my road bicycle, and I can leave from my front door any season. It doesn't matter. I can leave in the winter. There's snow on the mountains. If I'm wearing the right gear, I can cycle all around the city. In the winter, I can go skiing and hiking, and there's just so much to do. And it's like a big small town. People know each other. People grew up here. I run into people I went to elementary school in the grocery store. And at the same time, I can feel a little anonymous sitting in a crowded restaurant or listening to some music. So I think it has the best of everything.
That's excellent. One of my fond memories of being in New Mexico for a couple of years is that I learned to like peppers in a lot of stuff. I had never liked hot peppers before I went out there, and I started trying them, and that changed me. I like hot peppers.
Yeah, we have our state question is red or green. Which kind of chili do you want on your food? And I personally believe pain is a flavor, and that you should get the hottest.
Nice,
chili
I like
you can.
That. That's awesome. So let's shift gears a little bit and talk about teaching. What did you like most about working with kids?
There is not a moment in any year, in any day, where you're not totally engaged intellectually, engaged creatively, engaged emotionally. You never have the same day over and over again. When you work with human beings, everything changes minute to minute, day to day, year to year. And it's such an engaging and renewing profession. It is, I think, one of the best professions anybody could ask
for. Yeah, it's so cool. That's one of the neatest things. I taught history for 9 years, and that was just the magic of working with kids and seeing them when they get it and trying to figure out how to help them get it and just seeing them as they get excited about something that you're talking about. Good stuff. And it's just kind of magical.
It is. It is. And you can't disengage. You have to be engaged. You can't be a snoozer when you're engaging with either 170 high school kids or 25 second graders. You have to be there. You have to be present. And I think it just renews your soul.
I agree with that. That is so awesome. The great description there. So thanks for sharing. What's one of the biggest challenges that teachers face when working with kids in Albuquerque?
Well, I think that Albuquerque is embedded in the state of New Mexico, and unique to the rest of the states, we are totally state funded. So when our state is struggling, which it has been since the recession, we haven't recovered our educational funding. So as teachers, everybody is being asked to do so much more, but with less. We have fewer resources just in terms of, you know, books in our classroom. We have fewer support personnel, counselors to engage with the kids. We have a need for updated everything, and our salaries are really depressed. So, you know, you have a giant workforce. We're one of the biggest employers in the city of Albuquerque, and yet you have a bunch of people retiring, and teaching isn't as attractive as it used to be. People go into teaching. They're asked to do so much, and mostly they just want to be respected, and they need the resources to teach well.
I want to go back to something you just said, because that's interesting. So Albuquerque, I mean, New Mexico is completely state-funded?
Yeah, and it's a good thing in a lot of ways. In 1975, the state legislature said it's not okay to have different communities in the state of New Mexico with different resources at a local level. So we want to equalize the way we fund our schools. They took all the tax money that they get from various sources, and they put it into Santa Fe, and they put it through an equalization formula so that it's attached to a kid. So a fourth grader in general ed is funded as a 1.0. But if that fourth grader gets speech and language therapy, they have a weight attached to that funding formula. All 89 school districts have the same funding formula that flows from the state capital through the budget to the local school district. The issue is, it's a great equalization formula if it's adequately funded. So right now, we're equal but inadequate, and that makes everybody starve for resources.
Thanks for sharing that. That would definitely make it challenging, because it's already a challenge to work with kids when you have resources to get. And then
right. You
add on top of it, you know, kind of desperate to find those resources, and that's going to make it even more difficult. So, you know, let's go ahead and... Since we're doing that, let's go ahead and let's talk about TURN for just a minute. So can you just kind of give us a brief description what the group TURN is all about?
TURN was created a little over 20 years ago by two union leaders, Adam Urbanski from Rochester and Helen Bernstein from L.A. And at that point, they said, we want to have conversations that have to do with, it wasn't called reform. Back then, we called it restructuring, you know, whatever you want to call it. But they wanted to have these conversations, and they wanted to share practices that focused on not just changing the way teachers do their work in classrooms, but also the system in which they're embedded, and also the unions that represent them. So TURN is a little bit of a play on words. It's the Teacher Union Reform Network reforming both teaching and unions.
Neat. That's what I thought was kind of interesting about it as I read a little bit more about it, is that it emphasized that reforming the unions as well. So I thought that was kind of fascinating there. So what we're focused on today is the report that's come out of the group called Our Turn: Revitalizing Public Education and Strengthening Our Democracy Through the Collective Wisdom of Teachers. And it has four key tenets. The first one being schools are learner-centered. The second one being teaching is a profession. The third, equity is honored in pursuing excellence. And the fourth, collective bargaining promotes school quality. You know, let's look at this from the opening of the report. This is a little statement that's there. The four pillars we outline are meant to promote the ultimate goal of public education in the United States: to advance the common good, Can you talk about this statement?
Absolutely. I think, you know, there are so many debates about the quality of public education, of schools, the quality of teachers. And so what we do is we take like a small slice of the purpose of public education and the role of public education, and then we put it under a microscope and we politicize it. But if you really think about what public education has done and should do in this country, is it unites us in a common purpose. And that common purpose is the idea that we all need to be educated in order to be engaged as citizens. We need to make sure that the public school survives and thrives, because it's the one institution that encompasses everybody, regardless of what you have in your family background, where you come from. It's the way to acculturate our citizens and to make sure that this great thing we call democracy continues, so that we're not just a segregated society of the educated and the uneducated. It's something that is there for all of us. And I think that's part of the public discourse that's been forgotten when we put that microscope on one small, tiny element of public education.
I love that opening statement, because it's, the idea of thinking about and keeping that in mind, that that's what we exist for. I think a lot of times people have forgotten what our purpose is, was set out, and it has that ultimate purpose of bringing everybody. It's probably the one place where everybody comes together for that short period of time, as young people through a certain age, but we're all together no matter where we're from or what our background is. And that's advancing the common good. I love that. So if you don't mind, instead of going to schools or Learn Centered, I want to skip first and I want to go to, this is how I run meetings too. I just, I have an agenda, but I still go, I skip around, you know,
yeah.
Sorry. What I'd like to do is talk about teaching as a profession. I'd like to start there. Then we'll go back to the first one. Why is this aspect of teaching highlighted and emphasized? What do you think?
Well, okay. So I was raised with a school teacher. My dad taught high school biology for 33 years. And during that time, he started in the 60s and he taught through the 90s. And during that time, the idea is, if you're a professional, then you're able to support yourself and your family in some kind of a middle class lifestyle. And of course, throughout my upbringing, that was a struggle there, for my father to be a public school teacher and support himself and his family. He did it. He did it amazingly. But at the same time, it was very difficult for him. And that is why so many men have avoided going into public education, because they can't, in a male stereotype world, support themselves and their family in the way that they wish to. So then you've got a profession that's dominated by women. And we have fought as women for a long time in the roles we have to be considered the professionals that we are, especially in a job like teaching, which has historically been, you're the second wage earner. You should, it's kind of a hobby. It's not a profession. So that's one. The second thing is, if we're a profession, we have some say over what we do every day in the classroom. We have a knowledge base that we bring into our classroom. We're highly trained, and we should not be micromanaged, whether it's by a supervisor or a policy or a system that thinks in some way they know better than we do about the needs of the students that are in front of us every day. Well, I remember sitting next to my father, and it was during the 80s, and we were all talking about how we're going to restructure schooling, and we're going to have site-based management, and we're not just going to have top-down decision-making, we're going to have bottom-up, and we're going to have a say over what we do in our classroom. And I remember my father turning to me at this meeting and saying, "Wow, I think your career is going to be really different than mine." And the unfortunate thing is, it wasn't. It wasn't so much different. And I would say, over the last dozen years or so, under No Child Left Behind, we lost a lot of ground as a professional or as a profession in general, because we ended up being test and textbook driven in a way that I had never experienced before.
Oh, I understand that. It definitely became different from a student's perspective and from a teaching perspective. It became focused on that. And that, you know, one of the things that is, you know, when we talk about, and I got to say this, I always remember as a kid in the early 70s that I had a relative who I come from, part of my family were teachers, and I always remember in the Daytona Beach area, I thought it was so cool because he had kind of other jobs, and one of them would be working in the camera department, another one was at a retail store, and another one was driving a Pepsi truck during the summertime, and I always thought that was neat until I found out later as an adult that they were doing that to make those ends meet. You know, it was cool until you realize that. Well, that, you know, realization didn't come till later. So, yeah, that's, you know, a big part of, you know, being a profession is to be able to support yourself as well as, you know, being able to have some of that say in those decision making. And so I appreciate you sharing there and starting there, because I think that kind of sets it in the right direction for the rest of the report here. So,
well, and a couple more things about this idea of teaching as a profession. We're always talking about being competitive. We want our schools to be competitive. We want our nation to be competitive. And what's interesting is the other countries that we are competing with have actually purposely chosen to build teaching as a profession. In fact, there are countries that see teaching teachers as nation builders. So when you think back to the first tenet that we're talking about, the public education as the foundation of democracy, then if you believe that, then you also believe that the educators are nation builders. We are building the citizens that will keep our nation going, keep our nation competitive, continue to reinvent jobs and basically the whole society that we live in. But it all comes down to the idea that teachers are respected as professionals and supported to be the professionals that they are.
I love it. Awesome. Let's go back to the first part of the vision. Schools are learner-centered. Could you talk about these thoughts? It says this: students have a rich curriculum that includes the tested subjects, but also ensures extensive opportunities to learn multiple languages, science, history, geography, the arts, physical education, and other important disciplines.
So a lot of this is a result of the way in which we have narrowed public education to be all about language arts and math, because those are the subjects that are on standardized tests. And we have truly done a disservice to the learners in our classroom by hyper-focusing on tested subjects, but also on the way in which subjects are tested. If you're truly learner-centered, you're not going to cover some kind of curriculum. You're not going to just go along the surface and go really fast because you've got to get to the factoids that are tested in the spring for every kid. You're going to make sure that you do several things. You go deep, because coverage is the enemy of understanding. And if you go deep and you connect subjects with each other. So when I'm teaching young children to read, the whole point is that we're reading about interesting stuff. We're reading about science. We're reading about social studies. We're applying our writing in rich projects that connect the content areas together. And as you go deep, you teach for understanding, you do that, and then the students are going to do better on any testing measure. But because of the high stakes and the way in which we got pushed into this testing culture without really looking at how that applied to learning, the whole system in general kind of became a coverage skill drill test, blame, shame kind of thing. And what we want to do is bring it back to the learner, respect the learner, respect that all of us learn by connecting things in our lives and not by looking at little disconnected facts.
Excellent. Yeah, that's, you know, it's one of the things that I think that something that the whole testing focus leaves behind is the idea of we're working with children who are developing, and they go through stages of life, and some of them faster than others. And when you understand and learn more about pedagogy, you start understanding a little bit more about those stages and things that happen, and then the outside influences that either assist or push against them in their levels of development. And I think that figuring out how to become more learner centered and creating these opportunities for kids to really be able to experience some of what that may be down the road for them is really a big part of what we're supposed to be about.
And the idea of learner-centered has side effects that are really important. The first side effect is that you teach for understanding, so that it's not just what a student knows, but what they're able to do with what they know. The second thing is you really respect the person in front of you, and you see them, all students, as assets and not deficits. So you build on those assets that they all bring into the classroom. And if you respect students like that, then they're more likely to stay engaged in school, rather than this idea that if you don't perform, somehow you reflect poorly on me as a teacher or the school or the system in general, which disengages the learner, and then you've got to drop out.
Awesome. I appreciate you reflecting on that. That's it's so important that they get a chance to, we have to figure out how to, find that thing that makes them excited. I mean, I can't say enough about that. It's with every kid, it's different, and some of them it comes at different times, and some of them, it's like a young man told me one time, I taught him as a 10th grader, and I tried very much to get him to get excited about the subject, and he tried a little bit, and then as a junior, he came back to me and he apologized about his 10th grade year, and because he appreciated what I was trying to do, and he was fighting with his father. That's what was going on that year. Yeah. He was fighting against his father, and he stopped doing that as a junior, and his life got better, and he focused more in school. But I'll never forget him coming to me and saying, just know I appreciate what you're trying. I wasn't going to let you go too far.
It was a bad year for me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that speaks a lot to it, because that's what they're human beings who have things going on in their worlds, and we're trying to figure out how to tap into the, going back to something you said earlier, that magic, we're trying to make that magic work where they can say, hey, I'm going to put some of this stuff aside because I'm really getting into this. And so we need to be able to figure out how to get them, that learner centered is so important. So,
and the irony is, everything has been focused so much, at least outside of the classroom, on this idea of test scores. The irony is, when you teach for understanding and you really are centered on the learners in front of you and not the test score that's coming in the spring, you do better on the tests, and the students learn the skills that they truly need to be functioning adults in the workforce. So we need to be able to communicate with each other. We need to be able to solve complex problems. We need to be creative. We need to be collaborative. And those are the things that the business community says they want from public education. And yet we push public education into this solo, high stakes, fill in the bubble kind of thing that is the opposite of what would truly work for all of us as a nation.
I like that. I like that. Let's move on and let's talk about the third pillar. Focuses on equity. A recurring theme in this segment is well-resourced and support. And I've heard you say that a couple of times. What could happen if we had those resources? What challenges are being referenced in this third pillar?
Well, a lot of things. Every report you read nowadays says that for the first time in the history of America, we have more children living in poverty than not living in poverty. So we've got a lot of kids whose guardians and parents are struggling to support them. And so without looking at equity, without looking at the kinds of things Linda Darling Hammond calls it opportunity to learn standards. Do we have a well-prepared teacher? Do we have a well-supported teacher? Do we have a well-resourced classroom? Do we have equal access to technology? Do we all have just the basic things like a building with heat and air? Do we have after-school care and before-school care so the children have a caring adult that looks after them throughout their life? Do we have access to early childhood education and preschool on a universal kind of way? That kind of thing makes a difference when you look at the purpose of public schooling, which is really to create an educated citizenry. We need to make sure everybody has access. But it's not just resources. The founding director of TURN, Adam Urbanski, has said often, equity without excellence is just privilege. So we need to look at the way in which everybody comes from different backgrounds, some of which are backgrounds of poverty, but they bring assets into the classroom. And it's our job to make sure that our schools are all places of excellence and engagement so that we have equity and excellence together for all students.
Love it. Excellent. Good stuff. So the last pillar, collective bargaining and other forms of collective decision making, promote school quality. And earlier you said that this comes out of the idea of reforming unions as well. So can you talk about what's going on here?
Happy to. So when I was a young teacher and I was getting involved in my union, the union president of the AFT, and I'm an affiliate of the AFT, was Al Shanker. And I would go to union meetings, and I was so privileged to be able, because I was active in my union, to hear Al talk and to be exposed to the resources of the American Federation of Teachers. And because of that, I actually became a better teacher. I credit my union with helping me think differently and deeply about teaching and learning so that I was able to progress as a professional to the point where I achieved national board certification. And it was because of the role of the union that I did that. So when I became union president, my goal was to make sure, in the experience of the members I represent, that professionalism and unionism are one and the same, that you cannot dichotomize bread and butter issues like good health insurance, a decent retirement, decent salary, with the idea that a union is there to help you become a better teacher. And so I have a multifaceted and deep professional development element to what all of us do as teacher unionists here in Albuquerque. The other thing is, in collective bargaining, so for example, many of my union peers, union president peers that participated in TURN had negotiated something called PAR, Peer Assistance in Review, with the idea that two things are ultimately important. You have a good mentoring program for beginning teachers so that you steward them into the profession in a way that helps them succeed. And if a teacher is struggling, you have a way to intervene in a fair, supportive fashion. And all over the nation, different unions negotiated this with different districts over time. And that is a role that I was finally able to fulfill as a union, negotiating beginning teacher mentoring and peer assistance for teachers who are struggling. Embedding that in a contract means that you no longer have a single entity that changes and gets rid of a good program. It's negotiated, it's jointly created, it's jointly managed, and you can't just unilaterally, when you get a new superintendent, get rid of mentoring for new teachers. So the idea that you can embed good things for the system in a collective bargaining agreement has been around for a long time, and as an important thing, is a part of this report.
Excellent. And I appreciate you sharing. One of the things that I think is, if you listen to the, if you read the report, if you focus on the tenets, the pillars of the report, I mean, it's all about supporting teachers in the classroom, and it's greatly appreciated because it's needed. The struggles, the challenges that we have with many of our, because it's not just with kids in poverty, although the population is growing. It's kids of all levels because it's difficult to teach kids. They have all the kinds of needs and desires, as well as, you know, the highest level kids oftentimes, you know, they start looking at you going, well, what you got? You know, what you got next? And you're going, hey, wait a second. How'd you get up there? You know, and that's very challenging as well. And as on top of it, understanding how to work with families and their wherever they are and what's going on. And all of that requires support and assistance in helping them continue in what they're doing and the desire to work the magic with kids. And so it's cool. So, you know, before we finish, one of the things I want to make sure is that where can people find out more about Our Turn and get a copy of the report if they'd like to do that?
So they can download it on the website. Just go ahead and Google Teacher Union Reform Network, and you'll be able to find it and download both the whole report and the executive summary.
Cool. If someone would like to get in touch with you, is that possible for them to just reach out to you?
Oh, anytime. You can just Google the Albuquerque Teachers Federation. You can call me. You can email me. Happy to talk with anybody. I think I just want to underscore that I think this report is about respect. It's about teachers who respect the students in front of them, schools and systems that respect the teachers, a nation that respects public schooling for the role that it has to play in the future of our democracy and the well-being of our nation. I think this is a report that changes the conversation that you see in the headlines all the time and switches it to one of there's good reason to talk about the importance of public schooling and all of the people in our public schools.
Thank you so much. So I have two questions that I like to ask my guests. And if I could entice you to answer those questions, here we go. So if you were given the chance to talk with 100 brand new teachers who haven't started teaching yet, what advice would you give them?
What would I say to 100 new teachers? Best choice you ever made. This is a profession in which you can be engaged with every fiber of your being on a daily, weekly, monthly, and yearly basis. It is creative, it is challenging, it is intellectual work, and all you need is the tenacity to reach out and ask for help if you need it and stick with it, and you will never be happier.
That is so cool. That is so cool because you're so right. There's the magic that happens. It's hard to explain, and people who don't do it, who don't understand, it's not an instructor. It's not the memory of that, you know, that one person who just went on and on and on. It's
wow.
It's actually the,
yeah.
The right. It's the magical people who spend their time trying to figure out how to make you want to know more, and it's be part of it, and trying to figure out how to engage you in what's going on. That's cool. I love it. So last question here. Do you have a teacher in your past who made a difference in your life? If given a chance to say thank you, who would it be and what would you say?
Well, I've been incredibly lucky because I've stayed in the same city where I was raised. And I've had that opportunity. And so I can think of three people. The first person is Sally Evans. She was my third grade teacher. And I remember her for, first of all, her kindness. And I was able to, after I became union president, say to Sally, where I went back when I was in Future Teachers of America and graded papers after school with her, and I was able to say thank you for her kindness. The second one is Susan Eyre, who was a high school biology teacher, who I had every year in high school and was a student aide for as a senior. And every time she comes back in town, we get together. And I say thank you because I hated being a teenager. And she saw me. She saw me. And she got me through those teenage years in a way that mattered deeply to me. And the last one is Keith Auger, who was a professor of mine, who helped me think about teaching and learning, not just from my classroom perspective, but from an analytical perspective of what does this all mean and how do we put it together in systems that actually support the best teaching possible. And he really influenced me later in my career as an adult.
Awesome. Thank you so much for sharing. I like hearing, because there's always somebody that's influenced somebody in education. And I love that when you hear people share their stories about those teachers or teacher that made the difference. And so thank you. That's cool. And it's neat that you, because I'm jealous that you have that, you know, growing up in the same place, being there, I moved all around and literally all around, even between states. So I didn't have that sort of connectivity. And that's neat to be able to be in those same locations, to be able to say that. So very cool.
Steve, I got to add one more person.
Go right ahead.
I got to add my father. My father loved teaching biology in high school. And there were five of us kids. And on weekends, he would cart us all up to his classroom and we would play in his biology lab. We would twirl on the chairs. We would take apart the model of the human body. But he modeled for me that he loved being a teacher. And I can't discount the effect of that on the choice that I made to be a teacher myself.
Excellent. And I'm glad you added him in there, because that's awesome. That is awesome. The impact, being able to play in the lab. Nice. I don't know if they would have wanted me. I don't know if he'd wanted me around playing in his lab. I accidentally in college set the chemistry lab on fire twice. So
luckily he didn't teach chemistry.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. Ellen, I appreciate you sharing our TURN report today, and I wish you the best in all that you do. Enjoy that weather in Albuquerque, and look forward to hearing more about your endeavors. Appreciate it so much.
Hey, Steve, delightful talking with you. Thank you.
Wish you the best. Take care now.
You too. Bye.
Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is a proud member of the Education Podcast Network. Podcasts for educators, podcasts by educators. The opinions expressed on Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 are those of the guests and hosts. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is intended to share ideas, advice, and suggestions for classroom teachers and school administrators. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is produced for educational purposes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll share it with your friends. Take care.